Hi, and welcome to Healthy Vibes with me, Danny. Today's topic is all about psychology, and I am joined by an expert who will explain what that really is about. So stay tuned, and I hope you take something out of this. And as usual, do feel free to share with your loved ones.
Danny, thank you so much for having me. My name is Dr. Lucy Burns. I'm a medical doctor based in Melbourne, Australia. And my passion is helping women in particular undo years and years of diet trauma, lose weight if they need to, but most importantly, reclaim their health. And I do this with my gorgeous friend, Dr. Mary Barson. We have a business called Real Life Medicine, and we are passionate about helping women understand their physiology, but most importantly, their psychology, and helping them redefine their relationship with food so that they can lose weight, not just for, you know, a few months, but permanently.
Okay. Right. Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much. That's such a good intro. That's such a lovely introduction of what you do. And, you know, obviously this podcast is all about women of a certain age wanting to lose weight. And although I've had guests in the past who've talked about losing weight, but sometimes there are other aspects of it that people want to know about. I mean, for example, how you said something about helping women to understand, I think you said your psychology or the physiology, I don't know if I heard that right.
They're both.
Okay, so both.
Yeah, so the thing that's happening these days, particularly in Western cultures, but actually in all the cultures across the globe now, is insulin resistance. And insulin is a hormone that we all need. It's absolutely vital to life. If you don't have it, you have type 1 diabetes. But it's made by our pancreas, and its job is to keep our blood glucose, within a fairly defined range. Now, the problem that's happened over the last 30 or 40 years is that the pancreas is having to work very hard to do that. And it's a very good organ. Like, I love it. And it makes buckets of insulin. So that's very helpful to stop us getting diabetes. But insulin has a side gig. And insulin's side gig is fat storage. So when you have high levels of circulating insulin, it effectively turns your body into a fat storing machine, and you cannot break it down. And so this is really problematic for lots of us because, you know, I was a child growing up in the 70s, teenager in the 80s. I spent years and years doing very, very low fat diets, spending lots of time eating what I thought was healthy, of course, because, you know, how would I know? I was just a kid and I was eating low-fat yogurt, low-fat everything. And honestly, over years and years, I would yo-yo my life away and then got to a point where suddenly my usual trick of, you know, going on a low-fat diet didn't work. And I thought, what the hell's going on here? And so, you know, I found myself mortifyingly as a doctor with pre-diabetes, fatty liver, and a whole heap of metabolic ill health. And I just thought, I've got to do something about this. So, yeah, so I anyway went down the little rabbit hole of understanding insulin because I had high circulating insulin. My dad has type 2 diabetes. And I thought, this is not good. So at one stage, so I'm 54, 53, I can't remember. It was in my late 40s, and I'd basically resigned myself to thinking, oh, look, it doesn't matter. My husband still loves me. I'll just buy elastic waisted pants. It's fine. Who cares, you know? But the problem was I was actually getting sick. So I had to do something. And that's when I thought, all right. So I guess the journey for lots of us and lots of us in this space is that you kind of experiment on yourself first. And then you become so passionate about it. And I became so passionate about breaking free of diet culture that I then went off and did further training in lifestyle medicine, psychological medicine, and hypnotherapy. And now it's like my burning passion. I love it.
Oh, that's really, so thank you so much for that. And I think I just, when you said about diabetes, because I sort of like know people who been through who had diabetes. And on a personal note, actually, my mom, she's passed on now, she had diabetes. And that was actually for me the kicker that I should start looking after myself. And that's how I started my healthy lifestyle journey. And I thank God that nobody in my family, no one else in my family has diabetes, and I'm trying to educate people. But I think at the risk of sort of like my viewers are listening right now, the risk of sounding like a broken record, what advice would you give to people who have had diabetes? Because you just mentioned the fact that you've had it, your dad has it. So yeah, I mean, how would you now sort of like help them to go and, not just sort of sort out how they eat properly, because they'll say, oh, like you said, oh, my husband loves me, I'll just buy elastic weighted trousers or whatever. But now is the time. We can't keep doing that anymore, obviously, because we all know we have to take care of ourselves. So what advice would you give to people who are now sort of like they're stuck in a rut and like, okay, I don't want to overdo it. They're thinking about wanting to do it, but how do we go about doing it?
So I think I love the phrase that you use there of taking care of yourself, because that is absolutely what it is. It is really about the idea that prioritizing your self-care or your care of yourself now, because if you don't do it now, you end up spending lots of time in hospitals, in doctor surgeries, and having other people care for you, and that's very unpleasant. So the option of doing nothing is actually, I mean, a lot of people will do that, but it's really not an option, because by doing nothing, you're choosing a path that is ultimately going to lead to needing further and further medical intervention, medications, operations, etc. And look, I just think people have worked hard their whole life. We work really hard. You deserve to have good health in retirement so that you can live your life on your terms. You don't want to be spending your retirement trotting around to medical appointments. It's pointless and depressing. So the thing about, giving up on yourself or thinking it's too late, it's actually never too late. You can always make a positive impact. But the thing, and look, it's really tricky within nutrition. There's lots of schools of thought, and in Australia, probably where you are too, we have a phrase, there's many ways to skin a cat, and there absolutely is here.
Oh, we've got
The
that
number
phrase here in
one,
England too.
yeah. Yeah, and the number one thing, and I think you mentioned this many times too, is to eat as much unprocessed food as possible. So unprocessed food is very helpful, but for some people, again, if they have very severe or advanced diabetes, they'll find that even eating unprocessed carbohydrates can cause their glucose to go high, and then they're having to manage that with medication or insulin. So the way I reversed my prediabetes was essentially to lower my insulin. So lowering your insulin is the absolute key. And the way to do that is to try, and again, not in, you don't need to count points or carbs or anything like that. You can just lower it by knowing basically what the main groups of carbohydrates are. And again, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be reasonably consistent. So the way I look at it is, obviously sugar is a carbohydrate. Most people would know that. It's a sweet, I call it the sweet carbohydrate. Table sugar is made up of one molecule of glucose, one molecule of fructose. Then we've got what I love to call the savory sugars. So things like processed flour. Flour is just chains of glucose. It will put your blood glucose up the same as eating table sugar. So we've got this idea that sugar, most people would say, oh, your sugar's not that healthy, but a lot of people aren't aware that flour, processed flour, the way we eat it these days, is also just as detrimental. Many of the foods that we eat these days, even you take like something like oats, most people would think oats are healthy. But the way we eat them these days, we don't just eat sort of rolled oats. People go into quick oats. So they're basically processed, they're pounded down to almost a flour, and that gives a huge amount of glucose to our body that then has to deal with it by making piles of insulin. Now, if we go back to that first bit that I talked about, the problem with making piles of insulin is it also causes piles of fat storage. So the way I really like to make it really clear to people, if you have very high insulin, you cannot break down your fat stores. It's very hard to lose weight if you have high insulin. And lots of people will now relate to that where they go, yes, I can't lose weight. I just look at cake and I put it on. If you have high circulating insulin, it's physiologically impossible to break down lots of fat. So we go, all right, I use a little analogy just to make it really clear. If you imagine that your body is like a fireplace. Now, a fireplace uses two forms of fuel. It'll use kindling, and that's a bit like your glucose or your carbohydrates. Burns quick, but you know, big fire, but then dies down quickly. And logs are like your fat. It burns slow. Both kindling and logs provide heat or warmth. And same for humans. Carbohydrates and fats are just fuel, fuel for our body. Now, if you've got high insulin, you don't have any logs next to your fireplace. Your logs are in a woodshed, just down the back of your garden. So when you toddle down to your woodshed to get out a log, you will find that you're unable to open the log, open the door of your woodshed. It's locked. And for some people, there's just one little lock, but some people have like 15 locks on their woodshed, and all of those locks are insulin. So depending on how high your insulin is will depend on how heavily locked your woodshed is. So then you come back to your fireplace, by which stage you've just got a few smoldering little embers and you're starving. You're really hungry. You might be hangry. Some people even get a bit dizzy. They get jittery. They get irritable and they just have to go and eat something. And then people, you know, have this idea that either they're weak or they're greedy or that they're just hopeless and they just can't control themselves, but it's physiological. You have run out of fuel and you need to eat food to get some. So the way I like to look at things is, I mean, ideally we want your woodshed open. We want you to be able to burn both carbohydrates and your fat stores so that, you know, you can go for periods throughout the day without having to eat or without having that horrible hangry feeling. So for me, the way we recommend it is that we say to people, you know what, just reduce your carbohydrates. So smaller bowl of kindling. And then at the start, the shed doesn't open straight away. Doesn't, you know, it takes a little while because we've got to wait for that insulin level to drop. And so what we do is we can add lots of healthy fats to our diet. Gone are the days of the low fat, you know, scrape every morsel of fat off your meat or have your toast dry. Those days have been the cause of our current problems. So we go, all right, so, you know, what are healthy fats? Well, that can be eggs. It can be eggs have beautiful amount of fat in them, some cheese, avocado, nuts, you know, the skin on your chicken. Like, again, I think back to those days of Weight Watchers where I shredded every morsel of fat off my meat and it basically fried up like a piece of old leather. It's hideous.
I'm just thinking back to the day when the same thing was happening to me. I wasn't on Weight Watchers or anything like that, but yeah, scrapping everything off, like you said.
Yeah. And your food tasted like just boring. I used to call it diet food. Oh, I'm having diet food tonight. And it'd be, yes, some very lean piece of meat, a salad with nothing on it, but a bit of vinaigrette and just, And now I look and I go, right, now I go back to whole foods. You pick some protein. So, you know, again, it can be meat, fish, eggs, dairy. If the protein is lean, so if it was like a piece of eye fillet, then you might want to add some, you know, a knob of butter or something to it. If the protein's fatty, so if it's like a piece of salmon or some pork belly or something like that, you probably don't need to add much more. But, you know, you can have beautiful vegetables. If you want to have a little bit of olive oil or some butter on your veggies, do it. Because what happens then is that you're lowering that insulin, you're opening your woodshed, and you will find that you can return to those hunger and satiety signals that everyone talks about. If you're insulin resistant, it's very hard because there's another hormone in there. I'm getting a bit complicated, but there's another hormone called leptin. Yeah, and leptin is meant to tell our brain that we're full. But if you've got high insulin, you're also going to have leptin resistance and your brain cannot hear that you're full. So people get very hungry and they can eat large amounts of food because their brain doesn't tell them that they're full. The only thing that tells them if they're full is actually the volume in their stomach. But that doesn't last because, again, it's basically piles of kindling, burns down, hungry again. It's like this cycle. And the whole thing is people are not hungry because they're greedy or lazy or slothful. They're hungry because their hormonal system is driving it. So that's what I mean by fixing your physiology.
Oh,
long-winded
okay.
Answer.
Yeah. Oh, that was really good, actually. I definitely got an education out of that, because when you're saying about the hormonal side and people getting hungry and things like that, I found that's been happening to me quite a lot lately. I'm like, oh my God, am I being greedy here? Because I'm having to go back for seconds, because normally I don't. And I'll be like, okay, maybe I shouldn't. But then I sit 10, 15 minutes or an hour later, I'm feeling uncomfortable. I'm still hungry. But I'm glad that I don't have like junk at home. So I just usually like, I will go and eat a rice cake or something, or get a piece of toast. So I'm like, you know what? I'm hungry. I can't help that. And obviously if I carry on, I don't want to pass out and I don't want to make myself ill. So it's just kind of, I guess, trying to ensure that you, like you said, you know, we don't feel guilty or anything about the way we eat when we want to eat something. Yeah. So
absolutely. Yeah. Feeling guilty is really unhelpful. But hunger is a normal physiological desire. The thing that sometimes happens with us, though, and you know it with kids go, I'm hungry, and you offer them an apple and they go, I'm not hungry for that. So sometimes we can mix up a hunger signal for just a desire signal. And so I always go, you know what, you need to be really clear on what need are you actually satisfying here. Is it hunger? If it's hunger, honor it. It's your body needs it. It's fuel. If it's desire and it's not aligning with what you want to do, let's say you wanted to lose weight or you're trying to manage your diabetes, and it's just a bit of brain hunger that's sort of coming up with a story in your head. It might be a story that I need a treat. I've had a terrible day. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm angry. Whatever the emotion is, again, it's recognizing and having really good awareness as to what is the desire here. Is it desire? Is it hunger?
Yeah.
I always say to people, honor your hunger, think about your desire. You may not need to honor that. You may, but you may not need to. And I think I have a little phrase called egg hungry or chop hungry. Because if you're really not properly hungry, it's pretty hard to eat a boiled egg. Like they're really unappealing. But if you're actually physiologically hungry, it's really good. You go, oh my God, I can't wait to have my boiled eggs. I'm so hungry.
Oh gosh. Yeah, that's so true. But I have to say, I do like boiled eggs once in a while, but it's just kind of, okay, you know, let me just have that because I just need something. But it's very rare. Like you said, it is not the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I just wanted to sort of like build up on what you said, because I was just writing something down that you said about when you were mentioning the sugar for diabetes. So I wanted to sort of like move that over to people who don't have diabetes. How sort of like obviously people trying to lose weight, and we know that sugar is, you like you said, is part of the carb, it's part of carbs as well, and it is still part of the having sugar all the time, sugary stuff. It is, everyone knows that you still put on the weight. So how can people sort of like move away from that, and they want to cut down on the sugar? Because for me, I don't have sugar anymore. Right? And what would you say about things like sweeteners, honey, and all the others,
yeah,
and so on? Well, how would you address that? Should we still have a bit of sugar, or should we just stick only to the sweeteners? Yeah.
Yeah. So the way it's interesting. So in my experience, there's essentially three buckets of people. There's people who don't care about sugar at all. They're the people that have, you know, a piece of cake once a year and leave half of it on the table. Those people never come and see me. That's fine. You've got the two other buckets of people. And the two other buckets of people are people who are having probably a lot of sugar, but they could stop if they wanted to. They could cut down, and they just need a few tools to help them. And then there's the third bucket. And, you know, this can be quite controversial, but people, there are people who have true sugar addiction, particularly when it's commenced in processed food. Remembering that processed food companies, their job is to sell you as much of their stuff as possible. So they spend billions engineering, making sure that the mouthfeel, the bliss point is there to hijack our brain. So the way, again, I like to kind of liken it a bit like alcohol. You've got people who couldn't care less about wine. You've got other people that are drinking probably more than is healthful, but they could cut down. And then you've obviously got people that move into their alcohol addiction for whom, despite adverse outcomes, they're still drinking. And it's the same with sugar. There are people who have, severe type 2 diabetes with terrible complications. They've, had amputations and they still can't stop eating their bag of lollies or their box of chocolates or whatever. So it's really about trying to work out which bucket are you in. And there are lots, most people who are in bucket three, nobody wants to be there. Because the thing for bucket three is it is actually easier for them to have none than some. No one wants to be in that category because that feels really hard. But again, much like the alcohol. But there are people in that category. The people that are in category two, again, they've got upregulated dopamine receptors, they've got upregulated gut bacteria that loves the sugar, and all of that just keeps feeding into them, which is why they keep wanting it. So again, removing the sugar can downregulate some of their receptors and ultimately change, in particular, their gut bacteria, which helps your cravings immensely. And the thing is that once you get rid of it, once you let it go, you actually feel so good. Like you're suddenly not doing that hunger, that roller coaster I was just describing. You suddenly realize that, sugar is very inflammatory. And this is whether I'm talking about sweet sugar or savory sugar. We know it's inflammatory. Glucose jumps onto proteins in our body, causes them to oxidize, and we get pain, muscle pain, joint pain, stiffness, all of those sorts of things. You see it in older people who get rosacea. That's re related often to their sugar consumption. And, it is toxic in high amounts.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for that. So I just wanted to, another thing I wrote down as well is in terms of the fat that we should be eating as well. When you talked about, we just, when we, when I just laughed about the bland foods and things like that. So I've obviously graduated and sort of like not sort of I started adding avocado into my foods recently because I never did before. And I used to think, oh my gosh, no, because it's fattening, it's not that great, da 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 da. And then I also sort of like started having like spreads as well. So, but I wouldn't go down the butter route for sure. Because I just used to love butter so much back in the day. And I know if I go back into it's gonna be a slippery slope for me. So yeah,
Well,
so
in fact, that is such. Oh, sorry, talking over the top of you. I was just going to say that's such an important point because what you've identified there, which is actually the key, I think, to long-term weight loss, is what foods can I regulate easily and what foods do I have difficulty regulating? So for most people, again, I was in bucket three of the sugar stuff, sadly. And it just took me a little while to realize that actually letting it go, I don't have any sugar anymore. I don't eat sweeteners. I used to be a chocoholic, like I was called Lucy the Lollytarian. And, I would, food called my name. It was so frustrating. I'd be on the couch and I knew there was a packet of Tim Tams in, or Tim Tams or Australian biscuit, packet of Tim Tams in the cupboard. And I'd say, you're just going to have one tonight, Lucy. And I'd take a cup of tea and I'd tell myself about just having one. And, 10 minutes later, I'd be up having another one. And
And the
then
whole
I'd got to the
packet.
point where I'd have, ate the whole packet, quickly replaced it so no one else in the family knew what was going on. Oh, so getting rid of that for me has been life-changing. I don't feel deprived. I know lots of people, but the mindset for me is not about deprivation. It's about what can I regulate easily? And so I now have a lovely phrase where I think I eat everything that I want, but I've changed what I want. So that for me is food freedom. I think the thing that made the biggest difference is adding fats back into my diet, because it allowed me to have a proper feeling of fullness, so satiety, without relying on volume, so without relying on being stuffed to be full. So when you combine protein with some fat, it is the most satiating level of the macronutrients. Carbs, sadly, are not satiating. They only work on volume, which is why people have to have a bucket of pasta. No one has a little bowl of pasta. You have a giant bucket of this stuff because it doesn't fill you up.
Oh, wow.
So, so the healthy fats are fats that are just, you know, minimally processed. So, again, our fruit oil, so olive is a fruit. So olive oil, avocado is a fruit. Macadamias, your nut oils are good. The seed oils, so like canola or soy or cotton seed, they're highly processed and they have really large amounts of omega-6, which is one of our fatty acids. And omega-6 is quite inflammatory compared to omega-3. So most people know about omega-3. People take omega-3, fish oil, all of that. We take that because it's anti-inflammatory. Our two fatty acids that we have to ingest, we can't make them ourselves, omega-3 and omega-6, are great when they're in balance. But when you have large levels of omega-6, it's pro-inflammatory and omega-3 is anti-inflammatory. And sadly, all processed foods use seed oils, as I said, canola, grape seed, soybean, any of those ones. They use those because they're cheap and they have long shelf life, but they're not good for you.
Ooh. Wow. Oh, gosh, you just eat on the canola. Unfortunately, we don't really have canola in the UK, but I do have. I do use rapeseed oil, which I have been told is really good.
That's canola. Rapeseed is canola.
Ah, okay.
It's just renamed because they didn't want to call it rapeseed, so they could rename it to canola. So, yeah. Look, it's touted as being helpful because it has high smoke point and that sort of stuff, but it is, and again, small amounts, the doses in the poison, small amounts are fine, but because it's in every single processed food from peanut butter to bread to pasta sauce to curry paste, it's in everything, we're actually consuming quite a lot of it. Whereas I go, okay, and mayonnaise, you know, store-bought mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Oh, I love making mayonnaise, but I will use macadamia oil or something. And it's beautiful and it's whole and it's healthy and it keeps you full. So that now instead of needing to eat six times a day, you know, by the time I have my meals and my snacks and my thing on the couch, I'm actually just for the first time in my life, not actually very hungry. Mm. It's like free.
That's thank you so much for that. So I don't know what I'm going to do with my, well, the thing is I don't sort of like fry my foods all the time. It's only, and I actually invested in one of these spray bottles where I just put my oil in.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. So that's really good. But I actually reintroduced oils into my cooking actually, because I used to just dry fry everything. But like you said, it
of
was,
course,
we were talking about,
it was low fat. Bland. Yeah.
It was bland. And yeah. I'll sit there eating it every morning.
But you know,
yeah, and I'm going, oh my god,
yeah, and food is meant to be delicious.
Yeah,
and the most amazing thing is that particularly sugar, but processed food in general, steals your joy of real food.
Mm.
So the more processed food you eat, you don't get to, you know, your taste buds are all, you know, they're all crazy. When you get rid of all of that hyper palatable food that is designed to blow your brains and go back to your proper food, you suddenly develop your taste again. It's so beautiful. And I'm all about enjoying my food. Food is so magnificent.
Yeah.
So I think the thing is that, we got scared of fat. We really did. But fat actually has a lot of benefits. Like it transports our fat soluble vitamins. You know, it's, as I said, it's got anti-inflammatory properties with omega-3s, they're just fat. And it's almost like it needs to have a different name, because I think when we eat fat, our brain translates that into body fat, which feels, which, doesn't have wonderful connotations, but they're quite separate.
It's just I just I guess when you talk about the fat and stuff like that, you've pretty much covered everything I wanted to, all the questions I wanted to ask actually. But I just wanted to do round up and so in rounding up, if you could just advice that you could give to people who are a the di on a diabetes on the sort of diet people who are diabetes and those who are sort of like struggling, maybe struggling with their weight because like they've started the journey but they're finding it really difficult, really hard going, and how would they then, continue, especially in terms of food, that's just sort of like knowing what's right for them, especially if they got health issues as well, because obviously there are certain foods that they can't eat, things that you can eat. So yeah, that would be helpful.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we have a formula. We call it your build your plate formula. And, most people, again, in Western world are protein deficient. We're so heavily based on carbohydrate. When you think about it, you have cereal for breakfast or porridge or toast and juice. We'll have sandwiches for lunch with fruit. And then we'll have a meal with pasta or rice or potato, heavily carbs, which I know why. I mean, it's easy to cook, it's cheap, it's most people love it. So you can see what's happened. But we're essentially a society that's now quite protein deficient. Protein is a beautiful, nutritious source of food. So, our build a plate formula is simply pick a protein, add some veggies. If the protein's lean, put some fat on it and add some flavor, which can be herbs, pepper, a little bit of salt, and it's magnificent. So easy. And you will get all of your macronutrients by doing that. I think that, and again, if you're vegetarian or vegan for ethical reasons, then this probably isn't going to convince you at all. But meat has got such, it's been absolutely demonized when it is incredibly nutritious.
Agree.
And in Australia, we used to have a campaign back in the 80s or 90s called Feed the Man Meat, but it actually should be Feed the Woman Meat. Women need iron. We need truckloads of the stuff, especially when, we're still menstruating, and it really should be Feed the Woman Meat. So yeah, this is not an ad for meat, but bloody hell, it's very good for you.
I mean, I totally agree because I sort of like I kind of regard myself as flexitarian because I still have like I'm not giving up on my chicken. I'm not giving up on my fish. It's not gonna happen. I'll still have a balance. So during the week, I might have something vegan and all of that. But at the weekend, I'm hitting my chicken. I'm going for my chicken and tonight I'm gonna have fish. So there we go. But yeah, but I mean, like you
Fish
rightly
is a
said,
superfood. It's so good for you.
And like you rightly said as well, it's just kind of like in terms of, seasoning and all of that stuff. I've kind of like grown to sort of like put spices in my food as well, more spices now. And I found that it's really, really nice. I enjoy my meal so much. Yeah. So I think spices have a place as well. But obviously there are people who,
Absolutely.
So yeah, they're
Yeah,
always,
who like them? And it's really just experimenting a bit because, like we eat a lot of curries at my house, but I don't have them with rice anymore. Rice doesn't serve me. It doesn't help me. It makes me hungry. It puts my blood sugars up. So I now just have my curries like in a bowl, a bit like a soup almost. You don't actually, again, it's just a little mind shift. You don't, people go, oh, and even I'll have poached eggs. No, I don't actually have toast anymore. And people go, well, what are you going to mop up your eggs with? And I'll put it on a bed of baby spinach. It's beautiful. So there's, lots and lots of ideas that people can do but it just requires a little bit of lateral thinking. And for most people, if you think about carbohydrates, the majority of them are pretty bland. Like most people wouldn't eat a bowl of pasta without anything on it. Most people wouldn't need a bowl of rice without anything on it, and most people wouldn't need a boiled potato by itself. They're the delivery system for the tasty food. So the pasta sauce is the tasty bit, particularly if it's got, some mince and some mushrooms and some vegetables and some beautiful herbs through it. That's the tasty bit. So it's really just about, again, a bit of a mind shift there and accepting. that if you're insulin resistant, so if you're diabetic or pre-diabetic, so type 2 diabetes, just to clarify, not type 1, if you're type 2 diabetic or you're pre-diabetic, or you have, if someone said to you you've got insulin resistance, so if you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome, you have insulin resistance. And there's a couple of signs that people can look for to, if they're worried that they might have insulin resistance. So certainly if you carry all your weight around your middle, if you've got belly fat, that is usually insulin resistance. If you've got lots of skin tags around your neck or under your arms or under your breasts, if you're a woman, that's often insulin resistance. And depending on your skin tone, if you have patches of pigment, so particularly increased pigment under your armpits, in your groin, sometimes even around your neck or on your forehead, that can often be a sign of insulin resistance. So often just say to people, just, you don't even know you've got it. That's half the problem. Cut your carbs, you will open your shed, you'll burn your fat, and you'll feel amazing.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. We could go on and on and on. This has been such a re this has been really a really interesting session to really talking to you. And like I said, I got educated as well. And I do hope that everyone that's listening has actually taken something out of this. And thank you so much. And if people wanted to
You're
work
welcome.
with you or get in touch with you, how could they do
Yep.
that?
Yeah, so look, we have health and weight loss programs that we run o across the globe now, which is very exciting. And you can find out about them by going to our website, which our business name is Real Life Medicine, so you can Google that, or our website is rlmedicine.com. Somebody stole the reallifemedicine.com domain, so we had to do a bit of shortening.
Oh, shame. Well,
Yeah.
anyway, as usual, I will be putting all the Dr. Lucy's details in the show notes. Thank
Good.
you so much, Dr. Lucy.